Hey everyone, this is Dave King. I'm the drummer of The Bad Plus and Happy Apple and Halloween Alaska, among other things. And you're listening to the Jazz Spotlight.
Welcome to the Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that gives you the insight and tools you need to be in the music industry today. Artists, authors, and top music industry experts give you actionable tips that will help you promote yourself the smart way. Here's your host, Jan Ilunga.
Hello, happy International Jazz Day, and welcome to this new season of the Jazz Spotlight podcast. Jan here. I'm super excited about today's session and the upcoming episodes of the Jazz Spotlight, the podcast that brings you conversation, advice, and resources that will help you be a better artist. We start right off the bat with a bang, and I want to dive right into the interview because it's a really fun and interesting one. The show notes page for today's episode with the links to everything that is discussed in today's interview, you find them over at thejazzspotlight.com/episode90. Here's the interview with Dave King. Everybody, I'm really excited about who's joining us. And you may remember, if you listened, I believe it was to episode 36, he was actually mentioned, because when I asked Ari Herstand if he had some names to share with us, some inspiration, he mentioned today's guest. He's a composer, a drummer, a radio host. He also has a web series, so there is a lot that he goes by. He's known as the founding member of Happy Apple, as the founding member of a three-leader jazz group called The Bad Plus, and then currently touring Europe to present their new album, Never Stop 2. As I said, he also has a jazz show called King's Speech, and is also the creator of a web series called Rational Funk. I'm so excited to welcome on the show Mr. Dave King. Mr. King, how's it going?
I'm going well. I'm going great. Things are going amazing.
You're talking, you came from Estonia, so you're currently touring Europe. I have to ask you, how is life on the road?
Well, you know, you ask any musician about touring, of course, it's you know, a great thrill to be able to play your music for people, and to be asked to be all over the world playing your music is a great honor, really, truly. And some people say, oh, I'm honored, I'm blessed, whatever, and they don't mean it. I mean, when you play music that's really not commercially based, it's just you sometimes can't believe that you are where you are, even though we tour a lot and I've traveled, you know, a lot over the world for almost 20 years. But there is the other reality, which is it's, you know, it's physical, and you're tired a lot of the time, or, you know, you really want to be your best for the concert because that's really what you live for every day. So it's sometimes a battle to have the energy and to, just now I just drank a third coffee of the day in front of you right now just to get my brain going. So, I mean, I think it's that battle between the romance of it and the thrill of it to get to perform, but also the human side of surviving the fatigue and surviving, you know, missing your comfort zones and things like that. But you get used to it, and you're reminded when you get to play a great show that it's just a great blessing. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I have to ask you, as somebody who enjoys traveling myself, I wouldn't say I travel as intensively as you do, but what are some things you kind of do to try to stay at your best? For example, is there a specific, app you use, any specific record that you, or playlist you always have with you, anything like that, that kind of helps you get in the zone, get your game up?
I understand. For me, not really. I mean, I suppose some things I like to do, you know, to kind of stay inspired, if it's even a good book that you have with you, or I read, you know, poetry or whatever, some, you know, short form things that I can just be on a train and or be on a plane and still have some form of inspiration. Of course, listening to music. I'm not very tech oriented, so I actually have an iPod that I have still.
Still have one as well.
I love iPods, and I think it's like a beautiful invention. I don't understand why it doesn't keep going, because I don't really want to have my phone on a lot of the time or being able to be as contacted as a lot of people are wanting to be. So I have my music with me, and I don't know, I suppose just being able to stay inspired. You know, if you have any time to go to a museum in the city you're in or something, that helps me a lot. If I have time, I'll try and get reinvigorated by other forms of creativity.
Yeah, I think what you just said, it's fantastic, especially if you have the time to really soak in the culture or even the music. And I have to ask you, if we were to virtually look at your iPod, what are some artists, some bands that come to mind that you would say are right there?
Oh, well, you know, that's what's fun about it. You can know a lot about someone if you got a chance to look through all of their music. And I have one of those kind of last generation ones that had like 160 gigs, and it's got, you know, but I mean, you know, I have everything from, you know, some of the classic jazz records to I have, you know, Glenn Gould playing Bach, and I have Black Sabbath on there. I mean, I have, you know, I have Busta Rhymes, I have Public Enemy, I have all music. Like the music that I play, I think that there's so much text out there to use as an improviser that I think it'd be almost damaging not to go and listen and check out all music. And I think that there's nothing, I don't know, more short-sighted than when you meet someone or you see someone that's just a fan of this, one thing, or, you know, I'm into punk rock and that's it, or I'm into jazz and that's it. It's just limiting yourself to how many great ideas have been out there in different mediums, and I just try not to draw those walls. And that's the beautiful thing about an iPod, you know, there are no walls. Actually, though, it was so funny mentioning this, because the former pianist of the Bad Plus, Ethan Iverson, is still a good friend of mine. When iPods first came out, this is so beautiful, he had two. He bought two, and he had one for classical music and one for jazz. He didn't put them all. He had his two iPods separated from genre, and I just thought it was the funniest thing ever. You know, it was before they got big enough. I guess I kind of got it, but I think he even got, as they got bigger, he still had them separated and still got them bigger, so it was very funny.
Well, and I think it kind of makes sense. I mean, You see that, and I don't know if they had different color, but maybe one was like for the classical stuff, yeah, and then the separate one. But I like what you said, and I think especially for all the musicians or even aspiring musicians listening to you and I right now, I mean, nowadays it's so easy to get access to music regardless of where we are in the world. Obviously, now I'm referring to having access to the internet, but other than that, I think it's really easy. And I dare to say, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I dare to say that that's something you do also as a musician, because I was reading in one of your interviews that where you were talking about basically being a modern improvising jazz artist or drummer. Can you talk a little bit about that? What would you say are some things, and you kind of touched upon at least one of these already, but what would you say are some things that either you do or you would recommend somebody do to kind of try to stay, I don't know if up to date is the right word, but I guess you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean. I mean, obviously it's very important to, you know, be a part of your generation, but also look to what's happening with younger musicians. And I mean, I experienced, you know, some positive and negative experiences when dealing with like older musicians, when, you know, you have the younger ideas, because it's important to have young ideas, you know. They're different from ideas that are ultimately, we'll use the term mature or more mature. I think it's really important for young musicians to search beyond their control sometimes, or their, you know, their ultimate art statement. And I think that a lot of the times people can hit on some very genius things. And so I think that as a modern jazz musician, even though I'm sort of in the middle generation, you know, it's like the Bad Plus and Jason Moran and Brad Meldow and all these other people, as far as the American jazz artists, that we're sort of all a similar age group, Josh Redman, all these people. I know that from me, listening to younger, heavier jazz musicians of their era, the people in their 20s now are coming up with some I think it's just really important to not only be listening to the masters of the past, but also be checking out some of the really youthful creative spaces. Mm-hmm. And even if they're not the most thought out, unbelievable, mature idea, right. The fact is there's a lot there to be, you know, to stay relevant and to understand that it's a rapidly changing music. And it's actually, to me, you know, jazz and improvised music is a golden age for the entire world right now. I mean, there's so much interesting improvisers coming out of different areas of the world that kind of call themselves jazz musicians or celebrate the idea of improvising, especially in the piano trio format, for instance. And I just think that, and since that's a world that I spend a little bit of time in, it's like it's really fun to hear, you know, the ideas coming from, you can hear their ideas coming from contemporary classical music, coming from Indian classical music, mm-hmm. coming from, you know, what we would call world music or things. These influences have made their way in to the jazz world mm-hmm. on a very strong statement from the kind of post-Steve Coleman era, using rhythms, you know, grids and rhythms that were not dealt with. They were dealt with at the beginning of my generation, but I mean, you know, because we were exposed to odd time signatures and things via progressive rock and fusion and things like that. But to hear where it is now, that's another text to work with and have to deal with. Mm-hmm. And so it means staying on your game and really checking out what everyone is doing, you know? It's like I'm always trying to hear, you know, as much music from my peers as I am from going back and sitting in the great records that made me want to be an improviser. So I mean, I vacillate between like, oh, I'm going to listen to John Coltrane and realize why I fell in love with this music, or listen to Thelonious Monk. But also, I want to listen to what Vijay Iyer's doing, what Craig Taborn's doing. I want to know what these wonderful musicians are up to in order to, you know, to be inspired.
I couldn't agree more with what you said. And I mean, as we were saying, it has never been easier to access. You mentioned, for example, world music. Maybe 20 years ago, it would have been a harder thing to do. But nowadays, really, it's relatively easier to say to access all that music. And you mentioned piano trios. I know you started out with piano, I think, at the age of 5. And then you now are a drummer most of the time, I dare to say. And I know that you've played with your bandmate and friend Reed Anderson since you were 14 or 15. So I think it's an interesting relationship. I want to ask you, is there a difference between playing with somebody like him that you have known for decades or playing with somebody that you've known for a few months?
Well, there are obvious differences just as far as, you know, just knowing someone so well that there's a certain trust element to, you know, your not only your musical agendas, your spiritual agenda, anything you're using within music. He, I believe, you know, he and I kind of acknowledge that we grew up as musicians together. So in that way, we have that obvious deep history of having checked out a lot of the same music. So you kind of hear the rhythm in the same way, you hear the beat in the same way. And you know, you find that dawning of your entrance into wanting this life as an improvising musician, we found that together almost, you know. And along with Craig Taborn as well, the pianist who also grew up with Reed and I. So it's very interesting that the three of us continue to intersect. I play with Craig quite a bit, and you know, Reed and Craig are still very close. And you really have these long relationships, and you know, if you're fortunate enough to be able to keep them cool and fortified, that just has a you know, that space where you have that trust and that that, you know, knowing someone in and out and their personal life and everything like that, and it can kind of give you a comfort zone mm-hmm. that you might not have if you're working even with some really heavy musicians. You know, you could work with someone really amazing and have mm-hmm. and hit it off, but you can't really say you know them, right. And all of a sudden, you know, maybe there's something about their life or the way that you two relate that isn't quite going to happen in the same way, or it can burn out. You can have a couple of off nights, and then there's distrust of like, well, wait, I thought this was good at first. Right. Or you know, all of these, it's a very vulnerable space. And I don't think people talk enough about the sort of naked, vulnerable space that improvising musicians go through, because not only is there a heavy technical agenda, but there's a deep emotional, you know, emotional space that you have to share. and you're sharing a canvas, you're sharing an intimate space. And that vulnerability can lead to, it can be difficult. It can be a very difficult a space to navigate. Whereas a painter, they've got their solitary space, they make their work, and when they think it's ready, they release it. And you know, filmmakers are like dictatorial positions and all these other things. But being in musicians together, you know, especially a rhythm section, bass and drums or whatever, that's an intimate mm-hmm. way of hearing the music. And so I'd like, you know, I feel very fortunate to be able to have long musical relationships with the people that I work with. And they're always kept fresh by, you know, everyone still wanting to be in there and dealing with each other and dealing with new text all the time. Reed, of course, is a master composer, so you get to play his music. He's one of the great composers, one of the more unsung and brilliant composers in jazz, is Reed Anderson, for sure.
And staying in the realm of relationships, dynamics and things like that, I want to ask you, because you're involved in so many different projects. I know you have been part of over 50 records. You have, obviously, The Bad Plus. You have Halloween Alaska. We were talking about before we started here that you have a new album coming out. You have the Dave King Trucking Company. Mm-hmm. So would you say that your role, the way you interpret the music, the way you basically live the live experience when you're playing, changes if you are with The Bad Plus, if you are with Halloween Alaska? Or would you say Dave King as a drummer is kind of pretty much the same person regardless of the context?
That's a great question. I mean, I guess I've thought about it a little bit that, you know, when you play different genres of music at a certain level, there's no way you can kind of use the experience as just this blanket experience of like, oh, I'm Dave King the drummer and this is what it is, and I'm just keep, you know, do whatever. I mean, I play different roles for different things. I mean, for the most part, I don't do much sideman work because I actually feel like my time on the earth, if I have the ability to be a part of a democratic group or a part of leading something, mm-hmm. that's really my natural position. I sort of have a little bit of a type A kind of leader personality, even though it's a benevolent kind of thing. and that's why I work well with strong personality musicians, like people in The Bad Plus are all very unique, strong personalities. Same with Happy Apple, very strong personalities. And that, what I mean by that is I mean people that aren't easily intimidated or moved by strength. Mm-hmm. You know, they it's more like they are attracted to the idea of somebody's strong position. And in many ways, that's the sound of these bands, is they're sort of leaders coming together and sharing a space. So you have these very strong identities. Mm-hmm. Not one person is sort of saying, well, I'll hook you up. And so, and then the sideman work that I do, which is mainly with people like Chris Speed and Tim Byrne and Craig Taborn, have been fortunate enough to do these records. And of course, I'm open to playing with people, but a lot of times what I'm asked to do is bring me to the thing. Right. And so what that means usually is that I'm trying to bring some sort of fresh perspective as a drummer, but also as a composer and mm-hmm. someone that thinks about music that way, not just like, I'm going to hook it up with the best, you know, like, here come some drums, you know what I mean? Right. There are some drummers out there, and they're drummers, you know. And I always think of myself as, and I know maybe this even sounds like pretentious in some way, but I'm a musician first and then I'm a drummer second. And I think I play that way. I think I play the drums in a way that, and I've heard people comment, and if I could talk about that for a second, I don't want to sound like I'm just talking about myself, about my concept or whatever, but that I play in a musical way. Now, I think there are a lot of drummers that will say, well, I play a musical, but I think there are a lot of drummers out there that are just brilliant drummers, and they just think about the drums. Mm-hmm. And I really have always thought about the drums as a more of a musical instrument. I'm not just back there chomping at the bit to do a bunch of drum stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm there to try and create some sort of position of a dynamic shift, some abstract spaces, challenging different tropes as far as what the drummer does within a group. And it's been wonderful at times. You know, it's like something that's honored sometimes, and sometimes it's controversial.
Right.
And so, you know, for me, it's just like I decide what tools to use when. And if I'm working with something, if I'm doing a rock record or a hip-hop record or whatever, which I've done in the past, I'm not thinking about, you know, the ways that I can direct an improvisational flow. Obviously, I'm trying to deal with a song mm-hmm. and the structure of a song and what's necessary, but also to retain my identity as a progressive musician. I'm not someone that you should call to have the most simple, you know, like I shouldn't be called for a very simple rock gig,
yeah,
for instance.
For being there.
And that doesn't mean I can't do it, and it's a beautiful art form if you can, but it's really not in my interest. My interest is, especially in rock or any other form of music, I've always been attracted to the musicians that especially the drummers that change the sound of the band. Mm-hmm. And I've said that before, like, what would the Police have sounded like without Stuart Copeland? I mean, it's unfathomable, mm-hmm. the difference that the drumming made for a band like that, or Led Zeppelin, for instance. Right. You know, there's just no way around it's not an interchangeable part of the music, right? Mm-hmm. And so when you start thinking about pop music and rock music that way, you can start to understand, oh, wait a minute, the drums can have a role that creates a love of those bands. Mm-hmm. The it's not the hits necessarily as it is the sound and the groove of those mm-hmm. bands had a huge part of their success was based on the drums. And I just think that that's what I'm attracted to when I'm playing other music other than jazz. And I suppose I am attracted to that element of jazz as well, because I try to play in these bands that focus on songs and whatever. But you know what I'm basically saying it's a long-winded answer, everyone. I'm sure everyone has now left the podcast. But I try to be myself everywhere, but also know what I'm doing.
Actually, this, what you just shared, I remember the concept of claiming your stake is something you talked about in one of the episodes of Rational Funk. I'll make sure to add the link to that in the show notes, because I think you were talking about auditioning and then you talked about the role of the drummer and claiming your stake. And the final question I have for you is, I know this year, I imagine, has been quite busy and it's going to be busier because you have the new album of The Bad Plus, Never Stop 2, and you also have an upcoming album for another band you're part of and one of the founding members, Halloween Alaska. So to wrap this interview up, can you tell everybody a little bit more about, obviously, Never Stop 2 and about Halloween Alaska? I told you I'm a huge fan. I don't know if anybody who's listening to this is, but if there is anything that you can hint concerning that one as well.
Sure. Thank you for liking that band. It's one of those underground bands that it always has this critical acclaim, and then they don't really have a ton of people seem to know it, but then they don't. So it's more of an electronic pop group that I've been in for almost 15 years, and our fifth record is coming out in a few months. It's called Le Center, or The Center. And that's a band that takes its time making records. We worked on it for about 4 years. It's almost like making an animated film, I like to say. It's very detailed and whatever. And The Bad Plus is, we have our first record with our new pianist, Oren Evans, and it's just so exciting to be out here with him. And it's going very well. We have a record called Never Stop 2, and it's just so fun to finally get on the road, and the record's been getting very positive reviews and feedback, and the audiences have been wonderful. So to have a band together for 18 years and switch a key position in the band, it can be, you know, even though we're super confident about what it is, it can still, you know, you got to go out there and prove it now. Mm-hmm. And we feel that the band, with all due respect to what we did in the past, we think it's better. And that's the only reason why we wanted to continue it, is because we're not done with that voice. And Reed and I really formed the band. We wrote most of the original music, if you look at all the records. Mm-hmm. And so for us, it was a natural idea if we decided to continue doing it, to try to find the right person and go for it. And Oren, we've known for 20 years, is a wonderful musician, and it's really fun to be out here.
Nice.
So thanks for checking both of those bands out.
Great. I'll make sure to add the links to both bands, the albums, and everything in the show notes. Mr. King, thank you so much for being here on the Jazz Spotlight and for your music. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate your enthusiasm, and everyone, thank you for listening.
And we are back in the studio. I said it at the beginning of the show once again. The show notes page with the links to everything we discussed in today's episode and all the details related to today's episode can be found over at thejazzspotlight.com/episode90. There, you're also going to find the links to different apps you can use to listen to podcasts. In case it's your first time listening to the show, make sure to pick an app and you're going to find some options that you can use regardless of the smartphone you have. Make sure to pick the app you prefer and subscribe to the Jazz Spotlight podcast so that you're going to receive automatically every new episode as soon as it's published. I'm Yanni Lunga, this is the Jazz Spotlight, and the next episode is coming out on Wednesday. Thanks for listening. Take care.